This is an ACB Radio special report. My name is Brian Charleston, co-host of the Yin Yang Show, heard each Thursday night on ACB Radio Interactive from 6 to 9 p.m. Today, I have with me Mr. Albert Rizzi, a resident of New York State, who had an interesting experience recently while flying home from a business trip with his guide dog. Thank you for joining us, Albert. How are things going for you and your dog today?
Everything's going really well, Brian. Thank you very much for having me.
I wondered if you could start out by explaining to the folks listening exactly who is Albert Rizzi and how does he fit into the scheme of things?
I just recently joined the blind community a few years ago. In 2005, I went into the hospital on December 9th and came out this January 27th, 2006, completely blind. I have no usable vision, and in that sense, I'm an overachiever. I took to using the cane and found almost immediately that my mobility choices and preferences centered around the use of a guide dog, and my dog's name is Doxology. I call him Doxy, but a doxology to him, they sing in Christian churches, and it was a hymn that was written back in the late 1600s by an Anglican bishop called Thomas Ken, and it means a praise to God and a beginning, and it was Doxy's beginning as a guide dog and my beginning as a blind person, and whenever I walk with Doxy, I'm walking in the light because dog spelled backwards is God. And I quickly found that there were a lot of barriers to my assimilation back into the general public. Instead of fighting for my individual rights and individual access to employment, I launched my nonprofit called My Blind Spot, where we work to create respect and empathy for and access to employment for the blind, the visually impaired, and the print disabled.
Now, you, prior to blindness, were a teacher with a number of different companies.
Yes. Prior to losing my eyesight, I was back in the 90s. I was the director of marketing and licensing for Jones Apparel Group. I worked with the label a lot of the ladies will know called Jones New York. I managed a $300 million business for them. I then stepped into restaurant field and was the owner and partner in a few restaurants in New York City. And in 2000, my grandmother had passed, and she was a foster parent for 65 children over a 15-year period. And I did not want that to die with her, so I became a kindergarten teacher. I've got two master's degrees in education, one in early childhood and another in administration and supervision. I taught in the New York City school as a kindergarten teacher in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and then became the executive director or principal of a nonprofit in the South Bronx, providing direct services to students and their families in the South Bronx, like I said, ranging in age from pre-K to sixth grade kids, about 13. Still teaching on a different level, but still a teacher just the same.
Now, the other day, as you were coming back on a business trip from the West Coast, right, you ended up boarding a flight from Philadelphia, was it, or Pittsburgh?
Philadelphia. I was on my way back from San Francisco. I was out there working on a project that is nearing Fox Park. We're working with Intuit Incorporated to make the very first usable version of QuickBooks, and we're presently in a beta testing phase, and a number of ACB members are employees of My Blind Spot and testers for the product as well. And I was flying back to Philadelphia and was making a connection flight to get home to Long Island.
And you boarded that flight in the standard way all of us board a flight. You took advantage of an opportunity to early board, or did you not?
No, well, it was odd because the plane was on the tarmac, and anybody who travels via these prop planes knows we have to walk out to the tarmac, but the plane was so far from the gate or the doorway that we were loaded onto a bus and to the plane.
You had early board to the bus, but once the bus
I was the first one out on the bus. Yes, I was first out to the bus, but I was last on the plane.
Gotcha. So I got onto the plane, and where did they end up seating you?
Well, when I walked onto the plane, the flight attendant had mentioned something about if she had known she would have saved the bulkhead. I happen to like the bulkhead, and I know a number of my fellow handlers like to choose their own seat. So I told her that no problem, I'll just sit in my assigned seat, and she showed me to the back of the plane, which was my assigned seat, and I sat in the middle of a bench or a banquette of sorts where the middle seat was facing the aisle and the two seats to the right or to my left were in the other row of chairs.
Understood. So you were seated there and you had your dog with you. Yours is a yellow lab, is that correct?
Yeah, Doxy's a yellow lab. He is just about 8 and a half. He'll be 9 on March 18th and is about 82 pounds. He's a very big boy. Not fat, but big.
But big, understood. I've got a lot of lab using friends, and their dogs come in every shape, size, and color. So you were seated there, plane, no way of knowing how many passengers were or were not on the plane, so it seemed like a fairly full flight.
I got the impression it was a very full flight, because that's sort of the way it sounded, and given the fact that my seat was where it was and that there wasn't any consideration given to jockeying other people around led me to believe that everybody was as they were. So I took my seat and I sat down with a wonderful woman named Mary Comfort. And as I was putting up my stuff and stowing my bag, the flight attendant says, you know you're going to have to stow the dog. And I was like, well, okay, where? And she said, he has to go under a seat. And I said, I don't have a seat. So this became a brief conversation. Mary then offered her seat for Doxy, and we put him under Mary's seat and assumed we were going to take off. Well, we didn't take off for nearly 2 hours. And during that time, on two different occasions, Doxy kept sort of wiggling out and putting his head under my legs, and his hindquarters were under Mary's legs, never once in an aisle per se, never once loose or off leash or running up and down the aisle, running amok as ported, and was sleeping the entire time.
So she came to your seat two or three times while you were waiting on the tarmac, and each time asked you to stow the dog back under a seat. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, every time she's like, that dog has to get under the seat before we take off. The third time, it became a little annoying. And I said to her, I really don't understand why you're being so evil. And there was a gentleman on the plane, Kurt Butke, and he remembers her saying that. And her response to that was, if I were evil, I would just turn this plane around and I wouldn't ask you again. So I told her I felt that her attitude and her intonation was difficult to deal with, and she said she wasn't being anything but firm or anything but a concern for the security and welfare of the flight. I basically, you're not giving me the tools to succeed here. I don't have a seat to do what you want to do. It's an hour and a half into our wait. Why don't we just go sit down when you're ready to take off, you make an announcement, I'll shove the dog under a seat, and in 45 minutes, we will be in Long Island. This will be a distant memory, and everybody will be happy.
However, that's not how it turned out, is it?
No. 5 minutes later, or maybe less, we were told the plane was being turned around. And we all just assumed it was for whatever the reasons were we were sitting on the tarmac. Nobody ever indicated to us why we were waiting so long. And we got to the tarmac. We got back to the gate, I mean. And in came a gentleman and said, "Mr. Rizzi, may I help you off?" So I just assumed they were being polite and helping the poor blind guy. And as I got my bags and closed the overhead compartment and started walking down the aisle, it became very apparent to me that I was the only one getting off the plane. And that's when I said, "Am I the only one getting off the plane?" And the gentleman said to me, "We'll discuss that inside." And I said, "No, we will not. We'll discuss it now." I dropped a few F-bombs. I'm from Brooklyn. I became very enraged, and that was the only time on the plane that anybody could possibly stretch the truth about my upset or any discomfort I directed at this woman or at the airline. And I begrudgingly got out of the plane, took that walk of shame, and went into the terminal, wondering how I was going to get home.
Now, and what happened then, while you were in the terminal and interacting with the staff in the terminal, what is your understanding of what was taking place on the plane?
Well, when I asked this gentleman, Lamar, who really should be promoted and given a job for conflict resolution, he was fantastic. I said to him, "What's going on in there?" And he was, "Management's in there trying to resolve this." I figured I might be able to get on the plane. But, of course, I was still very upset. And at one point, Mr. Lamar said, "Mr. Rizzi, stop yelling. I think I understand what happened, and I don't disagree with you." So my ears perked up. His colleague, Linda, said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Mr. Rizzi was sitting down, engaged in a very polite conversation with the other passengers. There was no animosity in the air. There was no tension that I noticed when I walked in. The dog was asleep. And to make matters, there were seven other seats that were empty, that if she just moved one person, Mr. Rizzi could have had a row for himself." Linda's exact words were, "You mean that dog could have had his own seat?" And he said, "Yes." Now, I self-identify as an individual who travels with his guide. Again, some of my peers don't do that. I prefer to. I find it to be a polite and considerate way to travel. It gives the flight attendant an opportunity to reserve whatever seat they think is best and or plan to make sure that the people sitting around us or next to us aren't either allergic or uncomfortable. That they didn't acknowledge that was a big problem to me. Now, unbeknownst to me, on the plane, everybody is attacking this woman for being a liar. Opinions bantered about there's two sides of the story, and this guy had to have done something to get off to be thrown off this plane. There's nothing I did. So for all of those people on the ACB list who are scratching their head, assigning some sense of responsibility to me and my dog in all of this, it's not possible. Listen to some of the interviews that have been given. These people were adamant interpretation of this woman's outright lie and disdain for either me, blind people, or a dog. I don't really know. But they closed down that flight. They all marched into the terminal, and they made me feel so empowered and so humbled. And those 43 minutes that I stood there waiting for a decision to be made happened to be the second worst experience of my life since losing my eyesight, when I was told I would never see again. I went back to that place when I first went blind about helplessness. All of these low self-esteem issues crept up in, and I thought, what is wrong with me? And when those people walked in, I realized it wasn't me. I was humbled, and for the very first time, I was at a loss for words. And anybody who knows me knows that's a very, very rare thing in my life.
But so I was very then humbled. Airlines themselves provided a bus, and I use the word provided, I can't think of another way of describing that, but a bus what was made available, and all of your fellow travelers and yourself, those who chose not to stay in town and wait for another plane, piled onto this bus for what, a 3-hour ride out of Long Island?
Yes. We will give it.
And that's
given,
as compared to a 40 flight?
Yeah, yes. You know, it was kind of distressing, Brian, in that respect, because the next day, the only flights that were available were 3 or 4 different spots on 3 different flights over a 15-hour period, and that didn't work for anybody. The pilot refused to take off and refused to transfer out the stewardess, so it became, in his opinion, a hostile environment for a fly-in. And that environment was set, and the tone was set, by the lies this woman perpetrated and the voice that those 35 people gave to this injustice. We all of us, I think only 4 people might not have gotten on the bus for whatever the reasons are, but there was a couple on the bus that had to be in their late 70s, and they had just gotten back from Europe after traveling 24 hours to get to Philadelphia. And they were adamant that they were not on that flight without me. It was the most wonderful show of solidarity and support for your fellow man that I've ever personally benefited from or been involved with.
Well, that sounds really, really moving. And I understand that this kind of a situation is both a negative shock to the system, but that result is a positive shock as well. So since that time, you've been interviewed by a number of, correct?
I've been interviewed by media throughout the entire world. I've been interviewed by radio stations that air and broadcast in 75 countries. I was pleased to be asked to sit on the Global Voices discussion group last week, and it was picked up in the London Times. It's been in Canada. The attention this has gotten is a huge teachable moment community of disabled people, but specifically for the community of guide dog handlers. And I'm hoping to really maximize this and draw attention to the injustices and the odd regulations and policies that some flight attendants purport are critical to secure a safe travel time for those of us who use guide dogs, such as only sitting in the bulkhead or only sitting by a window. My friends Pamar, Donna and Glenn Pamar, just recently were here in September, and on a different airline were told they, as a married couple who both were handlers, could not sit next to each other or in a row together because it was a violation of some regulation. It's very unsettling to have this inconsistency, and I hope to correct that.
Now, last night I listened to a radio piece that included both a quote from you and a couple of quotes from the woman who had your dog slid under the seat in front of her, I believe.
Yeah.
And if anybody doubts the accuracy of what you are saying from one point of view, all they need to do is listen to some of your fellow passengers and what they've been quoted to have said. And again, hearing is believing. And I'm confident that the story you're telling properly reflects what took place that day, because I've heard it from the lips of others who were there with you.
Yeah, and that's a very critical consideration. And that is why I think we're being given this gift of a platform to speak to these injustices, because there are other people who can support exactly what I've said, all been consistent in our records. And if you want to see some of the coverage, the global coverage that we've gotten about this, go to myblindspot.org, and you will see a page on our homepage that will take you to each and every article and each and every radio interview and each and every television interview that we've done thus far. Draw your conclusions based upon factual information and not based upon conjecture and hypotheticals from other people interpreting information to you.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of ATV at large for sharing your story with you. I urge you to continue taking this, as you put it, as a teaching moment for not only the sighted public, the airline industry, but also ourselves as blind people, and some of us as blind people who are guide dog handlers. These are the kinds of things that we need to let the community understand, let the community take action about individually and collectively. I wish you the best of luck. And that website where people can go to see the collective media coverage was?
www.myblindspot.org. And I'm also asking everybody to pay this forward. Don't be afraid to ask to be respected. Do not, and people, be firm, be direct, and just don't take it sitting down anymore. I thank you very much for this opportunity. I thank the ACB, and I just want to give a shout-out to Guillermo Robles, who is the president of Blind Pride, and say what a great job he's doing with that affiliate. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you again, Albert. You've been listening to a special report from ACB Radio. I'm host of ACB Radio Interactive's show, and you've been hearing from himself, Mr. Albert Rizzi, a story that occurred in Philadelphia during his return flight home with his guide dog. Thank you all for listening.